The following program is brought to you in living color.
Earth has been resting. Now it's good. Someday I'm going to buy this land and I'm going to make a great wine. But here on this wreck of a vineyard.
It's The Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape and the lifestyle it creates. Now, here's your host for The Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
Amazing creature. She deceives everybody.
You swine!
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay sipping diva, and you are listening to another version of the show that's all about the grape in all its glory. Everything you ever wanted to know about the wine or the vine, we are your resource. Well, as always, we have worked very, very hard to put some kind of intriguing, entertaining show together for you. I actually happened to do that for a little bit down at the beach. I went out of the country, or actually I was sent out of the country after I offended the French in yet another show. And in doing so, I brought some literature along to read and to keep myself entertained on the beach, avoiding all the strange men in Speedos. Very strange question for our listeners. What is it about European men that think that Speedos are attractive? I've never quite grasped that. I see Kent in the booth just shaking his head. Kent, are you a Speedo man?
I will be glad to put mine on if it will help the show in any way.
So. Once again, be happy that we all have faces for radio around here, and there is no live video stream on thewinecrush.com. Well, anyway, as I'm sitting back and I'm reading all these articles that I've been dying to catch up on, today's topic came from the actual title of one of these articles, and it said things not to do with wine. And I had to stop and I had to take a pause and I thought, why would someone come up with some kind of title, Things Not to Do with Wine? Well, then my kind producer had printed some of these things out for me to read and there was nothing under it but just a big Google ad. So I never really got to the heart of the story, but mentally I started going over this. What not to do with wine? Well, I certainly don't want to put it in my gas tank. I would imagine that you wouldn't be very successful bathing a cat in wine. I would imagine your goldfish probably wouldn't be too happy about swimming in a vat of Chardonnay, of course, unlike me, unlike my friends. And ultimately, you wouldn't want to use it to, I don't know, wash your cell phone. For the kind people at Verizon, I really do spill coffee on it. I never drop it in my Chardonnay, I promise. But when you start thinking about what not to do about wine, you start thinking of different things that wine relates to. And since there have been a lot of number one TV shows lately talking about myths, this all came down to wine myths and urban legends that are associated with wine. What not to do with wine? I don't know. We have a lot of myths and a lot of legends of what we do with wine. So let's kind of take that as a tact. Well, today we have help to do that. We are going to have Richard Hake. He is the founder and chef of WineryChefs.com. For my longtime loyal listeners, you will remember that Richard Hake was kind of our chef in residence for a while in between gigs when he was help giving you food advice. We also have Judy Beardsall. She is the author of Sniffing the Cork and Other Wine-Related Myths. So between the two of them and, of course, my charming wit and intellect, I am sure we're just going to come up with one show that you will never forget. But before we have you forgetting the show and changing the dial, we do have to do our baseline wine recommendations for today. Going to the beach, it's hot, it's airy, and somehow sand and Chardonnay don't go very well together, especially not before 12 o'clock. So I had to do one of my favorite fallbacks and look at Sauvignon Blancs. And I will say this, I have found probably the best Sauvignon Blanc I have had all summer. It's a fairly new brand. It's called Foghead. And for you old 80s music listeners, no, that's not Fog Hat, it's Fog Head. And this is out of Monterey, and a lot of people don't associate Monterey with really, really good Sauvignon Blanc. It tends to be very cool down there, and so you don't get enough warmth to get enough sugar going. But I'm telling you, this is the exception of the Sauvignon Blancs you will have this summer. It tastes of citrus, it has the grass components to it, but what's really cool, it has pineapple, it has guava, it has tropical fruit in it. You even take it a step further, you can get some kiwi, some melon, some of those wonderful sweet summer flavors going. And for those of you who have just missed the apple, you can even throw that in there too. It is a virtual fruit salad of a Sauvignon Blanc. And as sometimes some of the Sauvignon Blancs, they tend to get too herbaceous, they get too green, they get to minerally. This is a wonderful, refreshing change. Coming from Monterey, this is definitely something you're going to have to search for a little bit, but I recommend you take the time. It's aged in stainless steel, so it does have a clean finish. But Foghead Sauvignon Blanc out of Monterey, definitely worth the effort, definitely worth tracking it down. So please do give it a shot and let me know what you think. And I guess I have to appease you red wine drinkers. And in doing so, it started because of an argument. If you go to the beach, there are people who love seafood and insist on having seafood. I don't care where you are. I'm convinced half the seafood you're going to get has been frozen anyway. And if I can't see it coming off the boat or flopping in the basket, I'm not particularly interested in it. So we had to find something that would balance between some tuna and a lovely, magical piece of the pig, some nice pork tenderloin. So we put it all together, and the best and great answer we came up with was Rodney Strong Pinot Noir. Rodney Strong does several levels of Pinot Noir, but this is their basic Russian River Valley Pinot. It is very cherry. It is very berry forward. What's really cool is it paired well with both the tuna and the pork loin as we were sitting there enjoying them. So it doesn't matter whether you're actually fish, fowl, or swine. This is a wine that will carry you through, and especially in the summer when you're looking at different marinades, when you're looking at different brines, and even the point when you look at a lot of people are doing chutneys or different kind of sauces with fish, this wine will carry it through. It's got everything you expect out of Russian River, plus it has that great berry nuance that sometimes disappeared. So your two wines for this week, Rodney Strong Russian River Pinot Noir and Foghead Monterey Sauvignon Blanc. You should be able to find them both at your local Mega Mart for under $15. So they give you a great break in your summer bank account as well. So when you start talking about wine myths and urban legends, I have several favorites that come to mind. And of course, we've covered a lot of these in the show for the simple factor is they basically tend to annoy me and I'd like to dispel the rumors. But there are some interesting ones that have really come to the forefront lately. My favorite so far, European wines don't contain sulfites. And of course, that goes hand in hand with my other favorite urban wine legend that sulfites give you headaches in red wine. Well, number one, let's remind ourselves, all wines have sulfites in them, period. Not a question, not up for discussion, not up for argument. The only way to get rid of sulfites is to actually put it in a centrifuge and chemically break it down. Once you put it through that much effort, it's not wine anymore. It's grape juice with alcohol. So keep that in mind. But I did find it interesting that all the French out there are saying, oh, no, our wines, they do not contain sulfites. I can't use that word on the air, but I think all y'all know what I just said. So those are some interesting ones out there. Now, here's another one that I have enjoyed, and I have made reference to it in the past in a joking sense, but I want to make sure we clarify this. We talk about old wines. We talk about wines past their prime, and we talk about the fact that if you have a wine and you haven't drunk it and it hadn't been stored properly, that, oh, my God, it's awful. It's turned to vinegar. Well, here is the truth to this. Wine doesn't turn to vinegar. It's kind of a euphemism we use for wine that's bad. Ultimately, there is a certain bacteria that you have to add to wine to make it to vinegar. And I would imagine 99.9% of the time, this bacteria is not going to be in your wine bottles. In fact, if it is, the moment you open your wine bottle and you're stupid enough to drink whatever is in the bottle, you're going to be ill. But old wine just goes bad. It loses its fruit. It loses its character. It tastes funny. It starts tasting like cardboard. It starts tasting like ethanol. It's different alcohol components. But in no way does old wine become vinegar.
What is old wine?
Old wine. We can take a gamut from this. How about a Chardonnay with a 1980 vintage on it?
Mm-hmm.
An old wine would be a Cabernet with a 1985 vintage on it, depending on where it came from. Anything that has turned brown in the bottle or any kind of wine basically that you spent under $25 for and have held on to for more than 20 years, that is old wine. The wine that has been sitting on top of your grandmother's refrigerator since you were small enough to be able to reach up and open the door, that's old wine. It's bad. It needs to be poured out.
That's close enough. Yeah, 2001?
2001? Not too old? Nope, that is not too old. That's a great vintage for most things. Although a lot of 2001 Chardonnays, in fact, 90% of 2001 Chardonnays are old. Now, see?
Now I'm confused.
Now you're confused. Hey, Kent, grab a mirror. Old will define itself for you really quickly.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
I'm in one of those moods today. But ultimately, this is what comes down to it. You find people who are trying to learn about wine and then hear little things along the way, and they put it together, and this is how some of these urban legends come about. You know, oh, old wine won't turn to vinegar. Old wine is vinegar. And what happens, because people like me in a position where we're trying to teach about wine make comments off the cuff, and that's when we get the rest of it in trouble. So I apologize if I have ever misled you. I just assumed that you understood that no, old wine could not become vinegar. So that is the theme behind today's show. We are going to find a lot of these old euphemisms, these old myths, these old legends, and basically shatter them for you and explain the chemistry of why and why not these things don't apply. So stay tuned, and we will certainly enlighten you as the show continues.
If they want to drink Merlot, we're drinking Merlot.
No, if anybody orders Merlot, I'm leaving. I am not drinking any Merlot!
The Wine Crush.
I heard in the news the other day about how one man's $3,000 credit card balance exploded to over $10,000 in no time at all. As good as the plastic in your wallet may be, if you run into any problems with your credit card companies, they'll hit you so hard with late and over-limit fees that your head'll spin, and so will your debt. At that point, you cannot stop your runaway debt problem. Well, yes, you can. If your credit card debt is out of control, you're getting collection calls, you're mad as hell, and you can't take it anymore, call us and one of our partner companies will negotiate on your behalf and show you strategies to help you get out of debt.
If you have $10,000 or more in unsecured debt, call now for a free debt analysis. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need health insurance, you need to make this free call and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. They specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it.
Here's the number. Call right now. 800-700-5437. That's 800-700-5437. 5437.
Don't take risks with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable family health insurance, call now.
800-700-5437. 800-700-5437. That's 800-700-5437. Not available in all states. Exclusions and limitations apply. North Richland Hills, Texas. Policy series on file. Not licensed in New York.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys, you going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. ask your doctor. Or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.
And all that glitters is gold.
Only shooting stars break the mold.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay sipping diva, and we are working on smashing all those wine legends and urban myths that surround the grape. And we have a little help today. Right now, we have Richard Hake, and he is the founder and chief of ChefWineryChefs.com. Richard has fortunately been on the show several times back when he did his tenure with Mondavi, so he knows that I tend to get tongue-tied and will forgive me for introducing his website like that. Richard, welcome back to The Wine Crush.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
It is fun to have you back. You were one of my favorite people to torment way back when.
I appreciate those kind words. It wasn't that long ago, just a year.
Is that it? I thought I had been rid of you for 10 years or more, I swear.
Well, I think a year ago we got started on this program, so I'm glad things are going well.
Well, thank you very much. We are definitely past our year anniversary, and it looks like things are going very, very well for you. Tell us about WineryChefs.com.
Well, WineryChefs.com is a website that supports my business, and I have taken my expertise of being the winery chef at Robert Mondavi Winery, as well as Cake Bread Cellars, and have packaged up all that experience, and I provide information on my website. But more than that, I'm selling my talents and expertise to the wineries here in Napa Valley right now. And I go in and provide them all the services of a full-time winery chef at a fraction of the cost.
I like that. And, of course, everyone loves to hear fraction of the cost this time of year.
I am the big-time economic solution for folks that are cutting back on their culinary programs. They can bring me in on a limited basis, and I can create the same wine and food pairings and experiences that they were getting out of their full-time culinary department.
Well, you are definitely the man with the answers, which is why you're going to be fun on today's show. Today we are kind of talking about wine myths and urban legends, so we had to have a chef come and talk to us. I think everyone who's been in the wine business who has tried to pair food and wine know that there's a myth that eggs and asparagus cannot be paired with any kind of wine. Is this truth or fiction?
It's fiction. There's always a wine that you can pair with any type of food that may be part of that wine urban myth.
Where do you think that got started? Why do people say that all the time?
I think there was about 30, 40 years ago when the American wine culture was starting, we were laying out certain ground rules, some basic rules, and almost intimidating the consumer to have white wine with fish and red wine with meats and avoid these certain food items so you don't have a bad reaction. And there weren't a lot of chefs here in America that had a good experience with creating wine and food pairings, and the American consumer was just being educated on wines for the first time, so you scare the hell out of them and they avoid it.
Well, I certainly use that as a motto. So the whole thing about white wine with white meat, red wine with red meat, that's totally bunk too then, right?
Absolutely. I'll do meals here at Napa Valley where I'll be pouring four red wines through a four-course meal. So that includes a salad, a fish course, and dessert. And they'll all be dry red wines that I'll create pairings at work.
Fair enough. What kind of white wines do you serve with red meats then?
Well, the funny thing that you should ask, someone was talking about daring pairings the other day and with me, and one of my famous recipes is a prime rib and Chardonnay. So a rich, buttery Chardonnay with a fatty, rich piece of meat, and the key here is the sauce. It was a mushroom cheese sauce over the top.
Oh, very good.
The sauce was the bridge. So you've got that the cheese, the buttery notes in the sauce that work with buttery notes in the wine, and the wine has enough weight to stand up with the weight of the food. So two things you're working with is complementary flavors. I'm complementing the flavor of the wine, the buttery flavors with the cheese and the sauce, and then the weight. I'm complementing the weight of the the meat and the dish itself with a weighty white wine. So Chardonnays are really rich, so rich wines, rich food.
I like that. Now, a question going back to the whole concept of asparagus and eggs and things that don't pair well. When you're looking to try and pair things with the unmentionables when it comes to food and wine pairing, is it all about the sauce, or can you actually take the things like the asparagus and the eggs to heart?
When it comes to asparagus, I think more than anything, you just need to be thinking about the brightness of your wine and acidity in your wine. I think you're trying to avoid asparagus more with tannic red wines. So it doesn't have to be the sauce with the asparagus. It's the decision on the wine you choose.
Okay. Well, obviously, there are probably 100 of different food and wine pairings or different food and wine myths we can come up with. But here is one that I stood by, and unfortunately, I will still stand by when I'm trying to pair out wine dinners. You find chefs that insist for the second course, they're going to do a salad. And invariably, the dressing is going to be balsamic vinegar. Is there any way to avoid doing a wine and balsamic vinegar pairing, or is there one way to make it superb?
As far as what dressing you use with the wine pairing?
Exactly.
Avoid the balsamic, and there's a product I use a lot here called Verjus, which is the juice of unripened grapes. And right now, the grapes are still quite tart, and you can find Verjus in a lot of specialty stores, and they're not as Verjus is not as acidic as vinegar, so it doesn't react as much with the wine. So that's one way, substituting the vinegar.
So you definitely can support me in the fact that all these chefs that say there is a wine that will pair with balsamic vinegar are once again insane.
Absolutely, and just how you use and apply the balsamic vinegar, and you can bring balance. Adding a little honey to your balsamic vinaigrette will counteract that tartness and bring a little sweetness that will draw out the fruit of the wine. One thing you're trying to avoid is anything with a lot of acid in a wine that has a lot of fruit is going to take away the fruit. So if you have a nice, big, fruity red wine and you apply a dish that has acidity to it, you're going to take away all that fruit. So add some fruit to the salad.
There we go. So that way we can at least find a balance. Well, Richard, it is always fun to have you on the show. I promise we will be calling to make you come back. But thank you for helping me get rid of some of these food and wine myths and
always
to actually educate our public.
Always a pleasure. Please, at any time. We're just enjoying ourselves here in Napa Valley, creating great pairings.
I would expect nothing less from you. Well, we will definitely check back in with you this year and see how your fall planning is going.
Wonderful.
All right. Well, I'm Laura Lawson. You are listening to The Wine Crush. We need to take a small break right now, but there is a myth that we shall return.
Are you feeling the credit card crunch? You're not alone. Increasing prices and the costs of credit are stretching budgets and preventing people just like you from getting ahead or just catching up with their debts. American Financial Solutions is a nonprofit organization that can help you get back on track with your debts and strengthen your financial situation. We offer a customized debt management plan, not a consolidation loan or a settlement, but a renegotiation of terms with your current creditors. You could benefit from lower interest rates, reduced fees, finally having your past due accounts brought back into current status, and a single monthly payment. So if you're falling behind on your credit cards, medical bills, or accounts in collections, get your current statements together and give American Financial Solutions a call now.
Here's the number for your free debt analysis. 800-793-2153. 800-793-2153. 800-793-2153.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
We are talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw 6 war canoes drawn up on the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their oiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. 4 figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov.
Listening to The Wine Crush, and I am Laura Lawson, and we are talking about wine legends, urban myths, and all the kind of fun stuff that is nice to dispel from the wine rumor mill. But we're curious, what kind of things have you heard with regards to wine that you want to know if it's fact or fiction? Reach out to us. Call us on the wine line, 877-427-8741, or you can email me, lauralawson@winecrush.com. Or for those of you who are just a little bit more shy, you can look at our Facebook page, which is, of course, Wine Crush, and post it there. But really, what are the things you want to know, or what are the things you may be confused about? Enlighten me. Because as we start talking about urban myths, there's so many different realms we can go towards and look at. And one of these I'd like to touch on right now. We had Benjamin Wallace. He was the author of The Billionaire's Vinegar on the show, I want to say roughly 5 months ago. And for those of you who have not gone out and bought this book yet, please do. What it does is it chronicles the tales of a Thomas Jefferson supposed bottle and how it was found, how it was revealed, and all the different players that are involved in actually attesting this bottle is real, not fraudulent. Well, the book goes on to totally debunk the fact and said the bottle is probably a fake. Now, Michael Broadbent, he is an English gentleman who actually has his palate insured for $1 million, has written thousands of books, was probably the first true wine expert. He is suing Random House and suing Benjamin Wallace because he is saying it's defamation of character, that it's libel. He says that Wallace accuses him of inventing a bid for the half bottle of Margaux to ensure the final buyer paid the odds. He also says there are references in the book to him colluding with Harvey Rodenstock, all of which he claims are quite false. Harvey Rodenstock is the one that miraculously came up with a bottle with Thomas Jefferson's initials on it. He's the fraud in the case. Broadbent goes on to say the book is full of inaccuracies and libel, he told Decanter.com. This is very damaging, claiming I have lost my grip. Well, what I find most interesting about this is the book has been out a year now, and all of a sudden they're buying up movie rights And this came out about 2 weeks ago. They're going to make a movie out of the billionaire's vinegar. And only upon finding out that this was about to be a movie is Broadbent all of a sudden up in arms about the fact that these claims have been made and bantered around with the public eye. So my question becomes, of course, Mr. Broadbent, have you truly lost it? Are you actually going after because you feel like you have been discredited? Or are you just going after the mighty dollar? I'd love to know what our listeners think. Actually, at some point, I'd love to know what Benjamin Wallace thinks as well. But for those of you who have opinion, give us a call, 877-427-8741, and let us know what you think is going down with that. Well, this is the show that's all about you and all your great queries, and we have lined up a couple of really good emails for today. So right now, this is from Jim in Chicago. Jim writes, I have used the Wine Away product you have recommended on the show several times on my khakis and my ties, but it does not work that well. Do you have any other suggestions? Well, I picked this email out for today's show because it goes hand in hand with the wine myth and legends. There's a lot of different folk remedies about getting wine out of your clothes. There is one, however, that works. You can ignore the one about 7-Up. You can ignore the one about Sprite. You can ignore the one about club soda. Club soda just gets you a little bit wet. And it's great till you take it to the dry cleaner, but past that, you're on your own. This is the only true tested urban myth wine legend stain remover I have ever encountered that works 100%. For those of you who manage to spill red wine on your khakis, on your tie, on your white clothes, get a bottle of Chardonnay or get a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc and take the white wine and pour it on top of the red wine. There is a chemical connection that happens. And what happens is that the white wine will displace the red wine as a stain. Now, most of you out there are saying, great, now I'm stained with Chardonnay instead of Cabernet. Well, once you let that set and you get the red wine out of it with the white wine, take table salt. Take table salt and pour it over the stain on your pants and on your tie. Once it dries, stain's gone, salt absorbs the colors, the tannins, all the level chemical components of the wine away, and you will be stain-free. So for those of you who don't find it easy enough, I don't believe in the whole romantic proposition that wine away can take away all your stains and all your worries, try the old folk remedy. It is a myth that works. All right, Jim, I hope that helps. If you get really bored, though, just feel free to open up a bottle of red, bottle of white, pour them together and see what happens. All right, right now I have Joanna from Smyrna. Joanna writes, why do people sniff corks? I have been told that this is incorrect and it's just a myth, but my friends insist on doing this when they go out because they feel like they look like they know wine better. Joanna, bless your heart. You must be a new addition to the Wine Crush. This is one of the things that we cover kind of about every 4 weeks, but let's go ahead and cover it because I think to me it is the biggest urban legend and myth ever. Picking up the cork that the waiter puts next to you after he opens the bottle of wine and putting that cork to your nose will tell you absolutely nothing except for if you are in the cork business or your family has been growing cork or oak trees for many, many years. The whole point of sniffing the cork began somewhere around the 1920s. I promise you this is a French thing. There's no way the Americans would have come up with this. The whole point of smelling the cork was to see if there was any kind of moldy flavor, if there was any kind of off flavor. Well, of course, there's no way the cork is going to smell perfectly clean. It's going to smell like the wine. It's going to smell like something that was in the bottle. In some very dire cases, with some of these Languedoc wines, it may even smell like bleach. Who would tell? But past that, the whole point of having the cork out there is to feel it. You put it in your hand. You see if it's wet. You see if it's moist. The only thing worth smelling when the waiter comes, puts the cork on the table, and presents all the different wine portions that he's going to present is to put your nose in the glass. That is the only thing that can tell you if the wine is off, if it is corked, if it smells like cardboard, if it smells like Brettanomyces, if it smells acidic. The cork will tell you nothing. So there you go. That is your tip. You can find out about people who know about wine and don't know about wine by seeing if they smell the cork. If they smell the cork, go to the bathroom and make fun of them. It'll keep you entertained. All right, we have to take a small break right now, but when we return, we have more entertaining people to come and help shatter myths with us.
Now that we sat nice, broke bread together, shared a glass of wine, I feel I know you a little.
It's dance time in Texas, and we're striking up the band. Z-Max. It helps your car, truck, motorcycle, or boat save gas and last longer. The secret of Z-Max is micro-lubrication. Z-Max penetrates deep into the metal of your engine and drivetrain where regular oil can't. Z-Max reduces heat and friction, dissipates carbon buildup, restores power, and reduces fuel consumption. Z-Max maintains mileage in your new car and improves mileage in your older car. It works. Log on to ZMAX.com to find a Z-Max retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
I heard in the news the other day about how one man's $3,000 credit card balance exploded to over $10,000 in no time at all. As good as the plastic in your wallet may be, if you run into any problems with your credit card companies, they'll hit you so hard with late and over-limit fees that your head'll spin, and so will your debt. At that point, you cannot stop your runaway debt problem. Well, yes, you can. If your credit card debt is out of control, you're getting collection calls, you're mad as hell, and you can't take it anymore, call us and one of our partner companies will negotiate on your behalf and show you strategies to help you get out of debt.
If you have $10,000 or more in unsecured debt, call now for a free debt analysis. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815.
When a legend like Carroll Shelby puts Z-Max in every car he owns, maybe you should too.
I know it works.
Z-Max with micro-lubrication reduces wear on vital engine parts and increases horsepower. If you're a custom engine builder or a do-it-yourselfer, Z-Max belongs in your car. Z-Max. Easy to use. One in your gas and one in your oil every 5,000 miles. Take it from Carroll Shelby.
I put my name on the line on that, and I mean...
Log on to ZMAX.com and find a retail performance partner. ZMAX. Performance you can feel.
Mozart toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious.
And so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes.
And soon you realize how impactful your kids' involvement in the arts can be.
They'll get better grades, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAMM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and today we are demythifying wine and having a fun time doing it. But right now, I'm going to get a little help. We have Judy Beardsall. She has done a little bit of everything. She has spent 20 years in the wine business. She was managing retail at Sherry Lehman. She is the owner of a Tuscan vineyard, and now she is the author of Sniffing the Cork and Other Wine Myths Demystified. Judy, welcome to The Wine Crush.
Hi, Laura. Thank you. I'm thrilled to be with you.
I am delighted to have you on the show. It seems like flipping through your book and reading some excerpts, you and I share a lot of similarities.
Terrific.
Well, today we are having a little bit of fun. We are coaching our listeners totally on myths and urban legends and all the things that are affiliated with wine that tend to make it difficult. I think by all means, you're bound to be the expert on it because you literally wrote the book. So what do you think are some of the worst myths that are out there?
Well, there are so many that we could probably spend days on this, but I'll tell you, so many people have their first or maybe most frequent wine experiences in a restaurant, and I guess you might say this is a combination of myths and pet peeves, but one of the things is I really like to control the pouring of my own wine. I feel it's much more relaxed and civilized, and there are a couple of reasons for this. You tend to have waiters or servers coming around and helpfully filling up your glass, but that doesn't really help you. And somehow people become intimidated and feel that they just have to let that happen.
Oh, I don't know. Some days it really helps me, depending on who I'm having to eat with.
Well, I find that I don't like the glass filled up all the way, and
right.
sometimes that seems to be the case because then you don't get the chance to fully experience the aromas. And also, you can't really judge how much you're drinking if people keep filling up your glass.
That does usually present a problem. So what you're saying is a glass half empty is not a bad thing.
Exactly. In fact, etiquette from the Victorian era was that the people who were serving at home would wait until your glass was just had a little teeny bit of wine in the bottom, and then they would refill because it was considered polite so people could monitor their own drinking. I also like to be able to not wait if the glass is empty to have someone bring it round. In Europe, generally, the bottle is put on the table, and it just makes it more relaxed and a lot easier to enjoy. And sometimes that bottle is coming in the middle of a very crucial conversation. You see something being poured in front of you. So there are a lot of reasons. Obviously, the restaurant sells more wine that way, and so you can see their point of view. One of the other things is wine by the glass, which is a very popular and terrific thing to encounter in restaurants. But when was that wine opened? And I think that basically what I see as myths are that we don't have control. I love wine and food, and I really feel that we should be able to control more of our own experience and not feel afraid to speak up.
No, and I think a lot of people get intimidated. In fact, I will go out to dinner, and I just want to reiterate this to our listeners and make sure you and I are on the same page. So it is not a bad thing to reach out and pour your own glass from your bottle when that bottle's on the table.
Absolutely true. Absolutely. It is absolutely fine.
My husband was actually silly enough one day to reprimand me. He's like, oh, no, the waiter will get it. And I said, oh, no, the waiter's not going to get here fast enough for this conversation. So it is something, so definitely feel free to reach out, pour your own glass.
Absolutely. And often, you know, there are many reasons for this. As I said, you just feel you want the wine and you should be able to, you know, where is that rule written that the waiter should do it? That's just, I think that's a myth. That's truly a myth. And it stops you having the pleasure that you're really there for.
When you sit back and you talk about all these things, you know, they can be myths, they can be legends, they can be just misnomers that happen because either of bad servers, bad waiters, because you were mentioning about restaurants, let's go ahead, continue on that. When you talk about how waiters come and control the pace of your dinner and control what you're drinking, how much do you think the restaurant staff proliferates all these myths that continue to go on?
Well, I don't blame them or say it's their fault. I think it's a systemic problem. I don't think they're deliberately trying to sabotage your dining experience. I think that they are under instructions to fill up the glasses, just like they fill up your water glass, which is great. They're also instructed to fill up your wine glass because that way they'll bring it. I've been in restaurants where they empty the bottle, you're all having a good time and talking. Before you know it, they've brought another bottle, pulled the cork, and you haven't asked for it. And then they'll say, well, we assumed you wanted another bottle.
Well, we all know what happens when you assume, don't we?
And what happens is that doesn't happen all the time, but it can happen. Or they'll say, would you like another bottle? I think you will ask if you'd like another bottle. I think it goes back to that there's an intimidation factor in restaurants, which isn't really a conscious program, but it's really something that's built into the system where we have to feel that we're comfortable with enjoying wine with our meals.
Judy, I think all of us have one myth. Just one that sets our teeth on edge, that really makes our hair stand on end. For me, it's the, oh, I can't drink red wine because it has sulfites and will give me a headache.
Right.
What is the one myth that just makes you want to slap somebody?
Well, that you can tell the condition of the wine by sniffing the cork, as in the title of my book. That would have to have been my number one myth, because, and hence the title. You really are presented with the cork. Even if you are the most educated expert, and I've made wine, I've been involved very much in the technical side of it, eventually you can tell if there's something wrong or a defect with the wine by smelling the wine, not the cork. And that, to me, is the number one irritant. Because, in fact, the presenting of the cork is for you to check that what is on the cork matches what is on the label.
Ah, here we go. See, this is kind of funny. We had had an email in the segment before, and it was asking about the sniffing of the cork. You and I have pretty much answered dead on. And to the Wine Crush audience, we are not in the studio. We did not prepare it. See, we do know what we're talking about around here.
Exactly. I think another myth is that the more money you spend, the better the wine is. And that really is a huge myth because it's simply not true. Many people drink the label or they go down the wine list and they say, well, what's the most expensive one? That's got to be the best one. Not necessarily true. There should be, at every price point, every bottle should be good on a wine list or in a store. So why? What makes it better? It makes it different. It makes it a different experience, but it doesn't mean better. And it's as if saying one child in a family is better than another.
That would never happen.
Right.
Well, Judy, I appreciate you being part of the Crush today. To our listeners, please, please, please take a moment. Go out, grab Judy's book, Sniffing the Cork and Other Wine Myths Demystified. Judy, do you have a website or someplace where people can come track you down?
Yes, I do. JudyBeardsall.com.
All right. Well, of course, there is going to be a link to your website on ours, but I do appreciate you being part of the Crush today and helping me shatter some of these myths that permeate our wine society.
Well, thank you so much, Laura. I really enjoyed being with you. And feel free to call me if you have any questions.
Trust me. Hey, we might have to do this again around October. We'll find some ugly myths and see what we can do then.
Okay. I'll be ready for that.
All right. Well, you take care.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, everyone here at the Wine Crush, y'all need to stay tuned. We are going to take a small break, but when we come back, we are going to wrap up and find some other myths that were out there that you didn't even know existed.
A toast, yeah? To high treason. That's what these men were committing when they signed the Declaration. Had we lost the war, they would have been hanged, beheaded, drawn and quartered, and oh, my personal favorite, had their entrails cut out and burned. So, here's to the men who did what was considered wrong in order to do what they knew was right.
The Wine Crush.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need health insurance, you need to make this free call and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. They specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it.
Here's the number. Call right now. 800-799-9991. 800-799-9991.
Don't take risks with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable family health insurance, call now.
800-799-9991. 800-799-9991. 800-799-9991.
Not available in all states. Exclusions and limitations apply. North Richland Hills, Texas. Policy series on file. Not licensed in New York.
Mr. Jackson, we're calling to say you're late on your credit card bill. Can you please call us to schedule a payment and avoid future late fees?
If you're getting collection calls from your credit card companies and you want to put a stop to it, gather your bills now and call the Debt Helpline.
Mr. Jackson, we've been trying to reach you. If we don't hear from you soon, your account will go into collections.
We can help you stop the late and over limit fees on most of your credit cards and reduce your high interest rates, in some cases up to 60%.
Mr. Jackson, this is our last warning call. The next call will be from our legal department.
Get your debt and credit card bills under control. Gather your bills and call today for a free consultation on how we can help you get out of debt. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. That's 800-948-6815.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chomping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-ya!
The Karate Glove chomps through anything. Just put it on and instantly chomp through wood.
Hi-ya!
Concrete.
Hi-ya!
Brick walls.
Hi-ya!
Trees.
Hi-ya!
Small cars. It can even chomp through these 8 guitars. It chomps things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
Welcome back to the Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay guzzling diva. And today, hopefully, we have put a dent in all of the wine legends and wine myths that have been running around out there. Granted, we have probably only covered about 1% of them, but at least it points you in the idea of how much erroneous information is actually out there. I mean, just think about a couple we didn't even really touch on. One of my favorite is that blood is used to filter French wine. That legs of wine indicate high quality, that antifreeze was actually put into Austrian wine. For the record, all of these are false. Hopefully we can get back to them at a later time. One of my favorites, though, is talking about christening a boat with a bottle of champagne. I want you to think about the logistics of this on today's boats. Take a bottle of Korbel, weigh its weight, and then think about smashing it against something fiberglass. Gee, let me guess, the boat's not going to make it far out of dock. So, but this will give you a perspective on how many different types of falsities are out there. And so what I do want to do is I want to end the show on a really interesting one. And this is my favorite myth to absolutely discuss and to debunk. And it's that wine is complex and you must study it for years before you're able to discuss it. If you can just look at the hour worth of information we have had here, it doesn't matter whether you're a chef, it doesn't matter whether you're an author, it doesn't matter whether you're in retail or if you sell wine wholesale, or ultimately if you're just sitting at home enjoying a glass. As long as you have a palate, as long as you have a mouth, and as long as you have wine, there is a way to put this all together. And no, you don't have to have studied wine for 20 years. You don't have to have a 20,000 bottle cellar. You don't have to have a master's. You don't have to be a sommelier. You don't have had to waited tables or bartended. It does not matter. The ultimate and worst myth that is perpetrated on the public about the wine business is that you have to have studied wine to know something about it. And that is absolutely false. It's why you're listening to shows like The Crush. It's why you're reading great books like the one Judy wrote, is so that you can know and you can learn. Trial and error. It's just like riding a bicycle, people. Take the training wheels off and actually try it. Well, I am Laura Lawson, and we are the Wine Crush, reminding you to sip socially, to drink responsibly, to drink what you like, not what you're told, but most importantly, in vino veritas, in wine, there is truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'll talk with you next week.